Today I'm joined once again by Marcia Reed, the managing editor of geopoliticalmonitor.com. Marcia, thank you once again for joining me on the Corbett Report.
Thanks for having me once again.
No problem. All right, Marcia, what would you like to talk about today?
Well, I thought it would be interesting to discuss Eastern Europe today because it's a region that has largely been overlooked by events in the Middle East. So there's a lot that's been going on in Russia, especially with Georgia, and also Russia's foreign policy with Latin America, and possibly a revival or a continuation of Cold War tensions. So I think that's something that would be worth discussing for today.
All right, excellent. Well, let's get right into it. What can you tell us about recent developments in Georgia?
Well, the situation in Georgia has gone pretty bad pretty quickly. It's a situation that's been occurring for a few years in terms of tensions between Russia and Georgia over Russia's breakaway regions in South Ossetia and Abkhazia. And just last week, Georgian forces decided to go into South Ossetia, which is a region that has broken away from Georgia in the 90s. And they have wanted self-determination, their independence, and are de facto independent, but not, I guess, legally recognized as independent or sovereign. And so Georgia has decided to send in troops to quell the secessionist region. And Russia has responded in turn by sending in its troops. And so now we have a full-out conflict, fighting that has seen about 2,000 civilians killed. And the international community is quite concerned in condemning the actions of the Russians for getting involved. The situation is that Georgia is a pro-Western country. It's been backed by the United States and other Western countries. It's been approached for NATO membership. And Russia's not too pleased about that. And while the United States is sitting here condemning Russia for its actions, for getting militarily involved in the situation, the United States has actually been funding Georgia since about 2002. And they've been funding their troops with equipment and training. At the time, it was to initially combat the Al-Qaeda threat in the region, Chechen rebels and Islamic militants. And they spent about, I think, close to $70 million on weapons and training. And there was, I think, the program's called Georgia Train and Equip Program. And they also sent in Special Operations Forces. And so this was a program in 2002. I think it finished around 2006. But Georgia's has this experience now in all this military funding, and in addition to its experiences in Iraq, they're able to better deal with, or what they think is better deal with, the situation with South Ossetia instead of using diplomacy, using military force. And so this is the situation at hand, and Russia is just not having any of it. They're tired of, I guess, Western pro-Western policies in their backyard, and Georgia going for NATO membership, trying to curtail its secessionist region, which actually identifies with Russia. And so this is what we have at the moment that's been going on. And it just remains to be seen how much further it's going to spiral out of control, if the United States might get involved directly or just continue just funding Georgian troops. So it's something that's quite tense at the moment, and really no one's quite certain which way it will go, if it'll escalate even further. But Georgia has said it wanted to have a ceasefire and discussions with Russia. Russia, on the other hand, is just not interested in a ceasefire. They want Georgia completely out of the region. So it's sort of this back and forth as things escalate.
So obviously there has been a great deal of American involvement in this, and of course Russia is directly involved. And this seems like it's setting up a Cold War type situation with proxy forces playing out in a politically tense region, a conflict between two of the major superpowers in the world. And what can you say towards that idea of this conflict being a type of Cold War redux?
Well, it's quite interesting because everybody thought the Cold War was over back in 1989, 1991. So everyone thought, okay, we have the end of history, and now it's neoliberalism and democracy, and the United States is the only superpower around. But Russia has really come back in terms of becoming more of a power on the international scene, and it's reasserting itself. And it's just, especially after 9/11, with the United States and the way it's been conducting itself with the war on terror, and you know, using the war on terror as an excuse to extend its hegemony internationally, globally, the United States is just deciding that it's had enough. And I think the Cold War never really quite ended, as it maybe it paused, it took a pause. And so you see Russia countering the United States in different areas, whether it's a disagreement with how to deal with Iran and their nuclear enrichment program, or vetoing Zimbabwe, or sorry, sanctions against Zimbabwe. The United States and Russia have disagreed on in many areas with regards to dealing with terrorism itself. And so I think you can see that this would be a kind of continuation of the Cold War. I don't know if it'll escalate to the point where we had the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis. I think maybe, hopefully, we'll have learned from that, or governments will have learned from that situation. But I do think it's definitely a kind of a continuation in that sense, and that the Russians see it to their advantage to sort of be a sort of enemy, or having tense relations with the United States, and garnering domestic support politically, as well as in that the region, and sort of countering Western encroachment, because we have the missile defense system that the United States wants to establish in Central Europe. That's another issue as well for the Russians. And so I think they're doing whatever they can to get Washington's attention and let them know that they're really serious about what they perceive to be threats in their region, or on their doorstep. And I think Washington sort of underestimated Russia, and especially with them being, Washington being so busy dealing with the Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, domestic election, a presidential election in November, they haven't really given much thought to how serious the Russians are about the United States not encroaching on their sphere of influence. And so Russia, I guess, is just sort of flexing its muscles politically to get Washington's attention and let them know that they're a serious player on the world scene, and that whatever threat they perceive, they're going to deal with, and they're going to back up their words, because President Medvedev had said, for example, in response to the United States planning a missile defense system, that Russia would respond technologically and militarily. And I guess people thought it's just, you know, all talk and no action. But now we see Russia getting involved in Georgia, and we see Russia continuing its relationship with Venezuela, in which they've spent about, or they will probably spend about $5 billion over the next 10 years extending arms to Venezuela, and also in dealing with energy projects. And also possibly reviving a relationship with Cuba, which would see Russian companies involved in oil development in Cuba's recently discovered oil fields, and potentially reestablishing a military presence in Cuba. So it remains to be seen how practical it would be for Russia to establish a military presence there, but just the threat of doing so would sort of evoke memories of the Cuban Missile Crisis and, you know, get Washington's attention that Russia is sort of encroaching into the United States' backyard, and sort of a tit for tat, this is what it feels like, and we're serious, so take heed, and maybe if you guys back off, then we'll back off. So I think it definitely is reminiscent of the Cold War, a continuation of the Cold War, and you know, if Washington decides to either escalate or back down, that's something that we'll see in the next few months with President Bush finishing up his term. If we have Obama as president, I'd like to think he'd be more rational or reasonable than Bush with his cowboy diplomacy. But if we have McCain, I could see that things would probably continue in the same way they have now with President Bush. So it's been quite interesting seeing how all these different areas of sort of connect the dots to a kind of Cold War foreign policy, or Cold War tensions with the United States, whether it's Venezuela or Cuba or Georgia, missile defense shield, vetoing sanctions against Zimbabwe, or dealing with Iran. They all sort of contribute to this sense of a Cold War.
Well, let's go back for a moment and flesh out one of those facets that you talked about, being the Eastern European missile defense system that the U.S. is seeking to implement at the moment. Could you give my listeners a little bit of background about that and why Russia is so threatened by that project?
Right. Well, the United States has decided it wants to establish a missile defense system in Central Europe. And the idea is they would have Czech Republic and Poland would be the countries that would host the radar installation and missile defense. And so the idea is that it would be combating terrorism and protecting the international community with regards to their security, in particular dealing with threats from North Korea and Iran. However, it just seems that it's not really plausible that Iranian nuclear missiles could actually reach Europe. Their missiles actually are shorter range, and it doesn't seem that North Korea and Iran would actually pose the threat that the United States is claiming it would pose to European countries. And Russia just doesn't believe that this proposed system is actually targeted against Iran and North Korea as it is actually targeted against Russia and its own missiles. So Russia is quite skeptical of the United States and their motives because of the limited range of the Iranian missiles. And they felt like this is just a continuation of the Cold War rhetoric in the 60s and 70s with the the 80s with Reagan and his whole Star Wars system, which was designed to protect the U.S. from a Soviet missile attack. It just really echoes that. And it just really seems that it's not really intended for what the U.S. says it's intended. And so Russia has responded by saying that this is really encroaching into our sphere of influence. And setting up a missile defense system in our backyard really doesn't make any sense unless it's targeted against us. And it's sort of like this cordon sanitaire that the United States is creating in Eastern Europe. And this combined with the fact that the United States has been trying to garner NATO membership for former Soviet countries like Georgia and the Ukraine adds to this sense that the United States is creating this missile defense system to combat Russia and not really Iran or North Korea. Russia has said that they'd be open to having a missile defense system if they were able to have some say in how it's carried out, maybe placing the missile defense system in not so much in Poland or the Czech Republic as in maybe Central Asian countries, maybe Kazakhstan or I don't know, some other countries in that region, but not Poland or the Czech Republic. And the United States has already inked a deal with Poland and the Czech Republic in terms of those two countries hosting the missile defense system. And so Russia, that's when they decided we're serious. Now we're going to respond in any way or shape or form to let the United States know that we don't appreciate what's going on and that you can't continue with this kind of unilateral security policy in another country's backyard. It would be the same as Russia putting an orbital missile ballistic defense system in Cuba without, you know, approaching the United States, and it would violate their Monroe Doctrine. So it's the same kind of feeling that Russia's had, and hence them finally sort of acting out by approaching Cuba and saying, okay, well, we'll revive our relationship with Cuba and we'll possibly have a military presence there and we can refuel our nuclear bombers or set up a ballistic missile defense system. And I think this will get Washington's attention and let them realize that just as Russia might be crossing a line for the United States, United States is crossing a line for Russia and doing the same thing. So that's what this situation has brought about, the recent announcement that Russia would boost bilateral ties with Cuba. It's a kind of tit-for-tat, spiting the United States. And I don't know if Russia will actually go through with it, with a military presence, but they definitely want to show the United States that if forced, if their hand is forced, then they will do so, because this missile defense system that the U.S. is proposing really doesn't seem to be, you know, doing what it says it's going to do, which is combating Iranian and North Korean nuclear missiles or, you know, threats from terrorists in, you know, Iran or North Korea, as the United States says. So that's the situation with that nuclear defense or the missile defense system in Central Europe.
Now, I understand that one of the cards that Russia is playing right now in order to combat the U.S. Encroachment into their zone with the missile defense system is to threatened the present Russian military presence in Cuba. But you also mentioned that they were strengthening bilateral relations with Venezuela. Can you talk a little bit about what that means, not only for Russia, but also for the U.S.?
Right. Well, with Venezuela, this isn't happened just recently. This happened, I think, starting in 2006 when with President Putin. And this was when Venezuela has been saying that for many years the United States is going to be attacking the region, and so they need to defend themselves. And Russia has responded by contributing significant amount of arms to Venezuela. I believe it's been at least $4 billion so far, and that it will probably continue to be maybe $5 billion over the next 10 years, and Russia contributing weapons to Venezuela, because Hugo Chavez believes the United States is going to probably invade the region, especially with Colombia as an ally. It would be a great, I guess, base or jumping point from which to commit any kind of aggression in Venezuela. And so Russia has responded with this arms deal, and also an energy relationship with Venezuela, involved in oil and gas. And so since the United States gets about 15%, I think, of its oil from Venezuela, if Russia is able to get a, I guess, front position in terms of oil development in Venezuela, that would squeeze the United States out of that market. And it would allow the Russians to have a greater control of, like, global oil production by being involved in Venezuela and its energy, whether it's gas or oil. So for Russia, that would put them in a stronger position to be able to curtail any American plans for hegemony in the region as well. And it's just Russia's way of reminding the United States that we can take this so-called Cold War, this kind of battle, to your doorstep. You know, it's not just a matter of, okay, if the United States is going to, you know, fund Georgian troops, or they're going to extend NATO membership, or they're going to try and set up a missile defense system, then, you know what, we'll go over to Latin America and we'll set up bilateral relations with countries the United States condemns. So we'll get involved with Venezuela, which is a huge energy producing country. We'll possibly set up a gas cartel that would rival, you know, in terms of like OPEC with oil, a gas cartel with Venezuela headed by Russia. We'll arm Venezuela with weaponry and be able to stop the United States from possibly planning any aggression in the region, which would be quite plausible for Venezuela. You know, and same thing with Cuba. I mean, it remains to be seen if actually any fighting would happen, but just the idea of doing this would raise Washington's attention, because I think they've been so distracted or so preoccupied with Afghanistan. I mean, Iraq has always been an ongoing issue, but especially recently with Afghanistan, events developing there and getting worse, Washington has probably not been paying as much attention to Russia in terms of what Russia could do, and might be miscalculating Russia's responses to what they perceive to be threats in their sphere. So Venezuela is quite the partner for Russia in terms of energy and being its number one arms dealer. And I think Washington would be hard-pressed to ignore this development. It may seem like, at the moment, nothing in terms of just business as usual, with Russia countering anything the United States does. But I think Washington sort of has to start paying attention to what's going on in Eastern Europe and how Russia feels about what Washington is doing in Eastern Europe.
Now, it seems that once again, the geopolitical maneuvering that's going on here is based on control of natural resources, with not only the Venezuelan-Russian bilateral relations and their agreements to develop Venezuela's oil resources together, but also Russia's close ties with Iran and their oil resources. And then, of course, Russia itself being a major oil and gas supplier for Europe. And then, of course, when you look at Georgia, it's one of the major transportation routes for energy from the east to the west in Eastern Europe. So what can you say to that in that respect about the transportation of energy and the securing of energy resources as a key factor in the current geopolitical dispute?
Right, right. Yeah, that's very true. I think that with Georgia, exactly, it being an important transit route for energy and a key pipeline, for carrying oil from the Caspian to markets in Europe. That's quite important, and why it matters so much, why Georgia matters so much to Western Europe, the EU, and the United States. And I think if it wasn't that for that, I don't think Georgia would have been such a big issue for the United States and also for Russia. So energy concerns are definitely a major factor in this kind of geopolitical wrangling or, you know, conflict between Russia and the United States. And because Russia's been trying to free its dependence from the Middle East in terms of energy, in terms of oil, by going to different markets. However, because the United States doesn't deal with countries who have, you know, human rights abuses or they have embargoes against, that limits the amount of, or the market that's available to them. And so countries like Russia and China will do business with countries that the United States won't do business with in principle, which hurts the United States. I mean, for example, with Cuba, the Russia is going to be gaining a foothold into Cuba's oil development, which is something American companies can't do because of the embargo that's been around for almost 50 years. And a lot of American oil companies are trying to sort of get around that and say, okay, let's just ignore the fact that we have this issue with Cuba and let us do business with them. And so I think a lot of American oil companies are really put out by that they can't do business with countries that they'd otherwise like to do. Because for them, I think it's just business as usual, principles aside. You know, we just want to get in there and develop oil and make our money. And for them to be held back by these political principles really hurts them. And Russia is just, or China has free rein. And so they are able to go into countries and do business that the United States wouldn't be able to do otherwise. But Georgia definitely is a very important to Western Europe. And I think Russia responded by actually cutting off energy supplies to Western Europe in response to the United States continuing with its missile defense system and also its funding and training of Georgian troops. So Russia is able to, you know, once again flex its muscles and let the United States know we're serious about this, and that, you know, even if it hurts Europe or, you know, countries not directly involved in this conflict, we'll do what's necessary to let people know that we're serious. And you know, when you have such high stakes involved, like in oil production or gas, it's going to be something that countries are going to do whatever they can to gain control of that. So I think that with Georgia being such strategic importance with regards to the transit of energy, like in terms of a key pipeline, that's going to be something Russia's not going to give up too easily in terms of, you know, letting Georgia become a NATO member or allowing the United States to continue funding and supplying Georgian troops under their programs that were supposedly designed to combat terrorism. I think that's something that, you know, has to be also taken into consideration and for people to realize why this is such a serious issue for Russia. Because people who might not know about this might think, Georgia, what does it matter? It's such a small country. But in terms of being a key pipeline and carrying oil to Western Europe, it's that kind of, that's what I think makes it such a huge issue as well. So I think wherever you see there's tensions involved, there's always going to be something involved with energy as well. I mean, whether it's oil or gas or minerals or just, you know, strategically important with regards to setting off any possible invasions in other countries, like a military presence, that's something that people need to think about too when they hear about countries they might not otherwise hear about and think, oh, I've never heard of Georgia before. What's so important there? Why do they care about whether or not Georgia allows their other regions to have self-determination? Or why do they care if they get NATO membership? Well, think about, you know, what else is involved. Probably energy, oil, gas, mineral resources, military presence. So I think energy is a very important issue to the United States and to Russia in terms of gaining preeminence with regards to control of global production and not being so dependent on the Middle East as well. So I think that's also something to take into consideration when looking at these conflicts.
So what do you think is the most plausible way that this current Georgian conflict will play out in the short term? And then looking ahead, how do you think that might play into the larger conflict that's now going on between the United States and Russia?
Well, I think right now, I don't think the United States will actually get directly involved in the short term. I think they're really stretched or spread too thin to actually get directly involved, hence sending military aid, money, or mercenaries. There's been rumors that Blackwater has been involved as well in the fighting. So I don't think the United States will get directly involved. I think what might happen is that Russia might prove too formidable for Georgia, and Georgia might have to actually completely pull out of South Ossetia. I mean, for the long term, this is definitely going to leave a mark on relations between, well, obviously between Georgia and Russia, but Russia and the United States. I mean, this is as close as we've seen to a sort of direct fight between the two countries. I mean, this is obviously proxy fighting, but this is as close as we've seen to Russia and the United States clashing over and militarily over an issue such as the self-determination of this region in Georgia. So while the United States might not get involved directly at the moment, I think Georgia is going to be overwhelmed by Russian forces, and that they probably will have to pull out of the region, and the international community is going to probably have more of a say as things get worse. So it remains to be seen if Russia might actually be held in check by the international community, and or if they'll just tell everybody, you know what, we don't care, this is our fight, and we're going to do it our way. So it's really quite a murky situation. I mean, every day there's something happening, and there's more fighting, there's calls for ceasefire, then there's ceasefires were rejected. So, you know, it could turn any way, but right now the U.S. won't get directly involved. Russia will continue. I think that maybe in the next couple of weeks the international community will probably get more and more involved, because I think they definitely don't want to see the Russians controlling Georgia, or actually South Ossetia, in terms of sort of absorbing it into Russia, because a lot of South Ossetians identify with Russians ethnically more so than Georgians. But it's a really tricky situation. So as I see it right now, it'll just probably continue in the same vein, with Russia bombarding Georgian forces. And unfortunately, more civilians will get killed in the process. But I think it will remain at just diplomatic talks between the United States and Russia, with the United States rebuking Russia and not actually directly getting involved.
Are there any other aspects of this conflict that we haven't covered so far?
I think a lot of it has been covered with regards to the implications for energy, with Georgia being a key pipeline, also the self-determination of these countries. I don't know if people have, and myself as well, have focused a lot on earlier when I mentioned that the United States had been funding Georgian troops because of the Islamic militants and Chechen rebels and the Al-Qaeda link. I think that's interesting that the United States always has the pretext of fighting Al-Qaeda whenever they go into certain regions. So I think that's interesting as well to see if that will come back again when maybe more news coverage is done of the United States' involvement in funding militarily Georgian troops. If the United States might sort of build that up again and say, well, you know what, there's still a possible issue of Al-Qaeda, and this is why we're in this region and why we have to secure it against, you know, Russian influence, because the Russians support the Chechens, or, you know. So I think that connection to Al-Qaeda has not been mentioned as much, but it might come up again when the United States explains why they've done what they've done, if they do explain why they've done what they've done. It's not been a big story yet in terms of mentioning the U.S. involvement with Georgia in terms of their long-term funding, but that might come up a little bit more later on. But I think for now it's been, you know, the huge focus has been on just a kind of proxy Cold War between the United States and Russia. So it remains to be seen what other angles will come up as this progresses.
Absolutely. I think you raised some key points there, including, of course, that the media coverage in the United States itself so far has been rather anemic, considering the the importance of the conflict. And there hasn't been a lot of examination given so far to the U.S. involvement in Georgia prior to this conflict. Although I have noticed, of course, geopoliticalmonitor.com has had some incredibly important reports already up on its website regarding this. Marcia, could you talk a little bit for my listeners who are hearing about it for the first time about geopoliticalmonitor.com and what kinds of information my listeners can glean from that website?
Sure. Geopoliticalmonitor.com is a really great website. We have a lot of interesting articles dealing with geopolitical issues, ongoing events that might not be covered as much by the mainstream media. And so we have a lot of articles and reports, situation reports, backgrounders, daily news, and other articles that are dealing with situations that would probably fly under the mainstream media's radar. So, you know, things that are going on in Georgia that might not be discussed in the mainstream media, such as the U.S. involvement in Georgia, is something that we would talk about. And it's a really great website to sort of educate yourself about what's going on in the world. And I find that quite often the mainstream media wants to play it safe and they don't want to offend, you know, anybody. But we just are not biased. We're telling what we see. We're reporting or writing about the things that we see without any bias at all. So we don't have an agenda to, you know, bring down or, you know, speak badly of governments, but governments do things that are questionable. And so we talk about that. And whether it's the Canadian, the U.S. government, or it's the Russian government, it's going to be on our website. So I really highly recommend that your listeners come to our site at www.geopoliticalmonitor.com and check out all our articles for all the latest that's been going on geopolitically.
And I understand they also have the ability to subscribe to the website. Can you tell us about subscription to the website and what benefits that brings?
Yeah, if you subscribe to our website, you can subscribe monthly or yearly, and then you'd be able to gain access to all our analysis and our forecasting of geopolitical events, and also our podcasts. We have audio podcasts for our articles as well. So if you'd like to actually listen to our articles, you can do that as well. And they would be sent to your inbox or emailed to you weekly with our forecasts. We have articles that are available for the general public to read, but then our analysis and our backgrounders are available for subscribers as well. And that gives more in-depth analysis of situations as opposed to just directly a news story. So it's a good service, I believe, for people who really want to get the lowdown and what's going on internationally. So I would highly recommend as well that people would subscribe to the website. And we have a lot of really great writers doing some really great reports and backgrounders on situations in the Middle East, in Europe, in Latin America, every continent. So it's a really great service, and I highly recommend people check it out.
All right, Marcia. Well, it's been excellent talking to you as always, and I look forward to talking to you again next month.
Thanks a lot. Thanks for having me.